Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Joe Donovan, and welcome to the Daughters and Sons Hour, a weekly conversation to address issues and concerns of daughters and sons of parents with mental illness. I'm here with Mike McCarthy. Are you on, Mike? Mike, are you on?
Yes.
Okay. Tonight we are going to be discussing mental health stigma, and particularly as it relates to growing up with a parent who has mental illness. And Mike is taking the lead on this discussion, so I'll let you go.
Okay. My name is Mike McCarthy, by the way, in case anyone was wondering. I think one of the biggest things that kids have to do when they have a mentally ill parent, the majority anyways, I know this was my experience growing up, is basically live a life of secrecy. And I think out of many demographics, probably there isn't many other groups of people that have to live a life where they can't really be their entire self in front of other people. I know that even as a kid, I never felt comfortable disclosing certain aspects of my life because I knew that there would be other questions that would be answered, like, you know, about your parents or about, you know, my dad. So I think that children in many respects have to live a life of secrecy and really keeping a side of themselves held back that you know, you don't see in other major physical illnesses anyways. Like if my dad had, say, cancer, I would have never had the feeling of really having to fear saying that, what other kids would think of my family or the unknown about having someone that has schizophrenia. You just don't really see that often. I know there was very much in my life that where I would have to kind of get around at some points in my life, as, you know, as I was a kid, I didn't feel comfortable having a parent that had a serious psychiatric disability. You know, having other people know that. It's obviously different now as I'm an adult, but even as I was growing up, I felt a lot of tension in outings, going out with other kids, and, you know, what people would think of having someone that, you know, many people would think is not normal, quote unquote. So I think when you look at a child's life and how you have to grow up, I know just even to this day, it's difficult for me to be really honest and kind of truthful. I mean, not like I'm deliberately lying to anyone, but feel comfortable around being around someone when you kind of have to live your life, or I did anyways. I don't know if this was everyone's experience, but kind of in the closet, so to speak. So I think that's very difficult for any child to have to deal with. I know that, and again, this isn't everyone's necessarily experience, but I know mine and my family, my dad's illness was not very much spoken about. It really wasn't. I can't remember really any times that, unless it was actually coming from my dad, that like schizophrenia was even mentioned or even talked about. So I think that's probably one of the, I wouldn't even say that's necessarily a direct stigma or discrimination, because it's not like anyone ever directly told me to not say that, but you felt as a child that you would be judged. And I think that kind of carries on sometimes into adulthood, and I think it's sometimes hard to shake.
I actually have an experience that really, in my case, I think really addressed that, especially as a young child. When I was about 8 or so, and just back in elementary school, and one of the other kids in class one day was starting to get teased because of the fact that everyone had known that night, the night before, the cops came, took his mother to the state hospital. So that kid was being teased all day long. I didn't join in on the teasing, but I didn't defend him either, because the reality was my mother had been in that same hospital a year earlier. And see, we were the new kid because we had moved to this area after our chaos from the year earlier. But so, you know, so that whole issue of learning to kind of protect yourself from attitudes, you know, I developed that at a very young age by, you know, okay, they're going to tease him, but if I were to stand up and try to defend him, they're going to tease me too. And, you know, and so I had to separate myself and kind of, again, isolate myself in that way, even though I, on one level, I knew it was wrong, but on the other level, it was self-preservation.
Oh, right, yeah. I definitely felt a sense of isolation in terms of that type of thing. I mean, it's something you have to, you know, come home at night, and you know, I often say that I would be acting, you know, when I would be out in public, and I come home to a completely different life that that not many people knew about. It's much like putting on a mask for a child, or, you know, for however old I was, that out in public I would be a certain way, and then coming home would be a completely different thing, because it's a completely different lifestyle. Like I wouldn't think as a child, probably into my teenage years, I remember I wouldn't think I said the word like schizophrenia at all. I don't remember ever really even using that word, because it was such like a hidden, you know, part of myself and probably our family. So I think that was a very hard thing. I know that I have talked to some people that actually, you know, that it was a lot different for their families, where they were much more open. But the thing that was kind of different about, I guess, maybe my family compared to yours, Joe, you said your mother was in the state hospital, is my dad, from like my experiences from the time I was born until, you know, my 20s, my dad was never really in a hospital. He didn't live in a hospital or anything. He lived with, you know, my mom and I. Doesn't necessarily mean he probably couldn't have been, but our family unit was somewhat more intact. And I always had a fear that people would you know, find out my dad had a mental illness, but I don't think it was really anything that anyone was all that keen on, or was even really aware of. But so it was, I guess, a little bit different for me, is that my dad usually was there. I mean, he wasn't always like particularly active in my life, but like our family unit was much more kind of contained, I guess, than most people. Maybe, I don't know. So I guess outwardly, I never faced that type of like, you know, what you were saying with someone actually teasing someone else. I think my dad actually, he felt that, because he would often make like references, because we went to the same high school, make references about like him having a mental illness or something. But I never actually felt, you know, the no one ever like teased me about, you know, my dad having a mental illness because no one knew, which it was probably, I think, another, you know, form of kind of, you know, the stigma and discrimination is that in my family, it just wasn't even talked about, which made it even so much more worse, I think, worse in many, many ways. It wasn't just, it wasn't open. I don't know if that's, if more than your immediate family were you know, much aware of the condition, because I know my extended family, certain members really weren't.
Yeah, well, my family was, it was more complex because it was, you know, my parents did divorce young, so I did grow up in that whole welfare world of, you know, the single parent household. So,
yeah,
you know, I never heard the word schizophrenia used in reference to my mom until I was in my late 20s, but I knew.
Oh, okay.
But I knew she went to mental health. I knew she took medication.
Yeah.
You know, I knew she went to the clubhouse, but I didn't really know kind of the diagnostic stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I honestly think, you know, if it wasn't for my dad actually saying that he had a mental illness or what it was, I probably would have never known. Because I know that my mom never, I mean, my mom would say things like illness and things and like just the kind of general terms, but in terms of actually like talking about like schizophrenia, saying that word, is that my dad was often the one bringing up the conversations. So, you know, just thinking back, it was kind of very, very, very strange situation now that I look back on it, that I, you know, obviously I kind of wish that I would have done that differently, but as a child, you don't really have much, you're kind of just put in that situation.
You know, again, like you said, I've talked to so many different other people, and their experiences are so varied on, again, what types of experiences they had and how much they knew, how much they didn't know, and, you know, whether family was trying to hide it from children or whether they were open about it. Does really influence a lot about how we kind of perceive kind of how our family looks a little different than other families down the street.
Right, right. I know one of the things that still today I have issues with is I don't like people really being in, even people I like, I don't really like people being in my home. In my apartment, I have a very, just from growing up, that I never liked it. I never liked people being in my home. Again, there were people I like, my friends, my family, and I just have a very, I don't feel comfortable with other people being there, probably from the years of just not knowing what would happen when other people were there. You know, the chaotic element of the you know, you don't know if there would be a blow-up or something would happen or what someone would say. So I feel very much like, you know, as a child, you have to walk on eggshells. So, you know, everyone with a parent with mental illness or has dealt with mental illness, but mostly children because we don't really have anywhere else to go, knows how we have to walk on eggshells around our parents. And again, it's just something that's carried with me through today, really, is that, you know, I don't like having people stay long periods of time. I feel very uncomfortable. It makes me feel, I don't even know really why. I mean, I do know why, but like, it's not like, you know, I still have that person living with me, or there's, you know, I have moved, you know, moved on, don't live anywhere close, but it's still the kind of that unsure of what, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, something's not right, type of angle. So I feel like a lot of the stigma and discrimination that I feel as a adult, you know, as an adult and even as a child, were never really things that were like explicit. It wasn't like I never saw anyone like abuse my dad or, you know, say even negative things about him, really. But it was everything else. It was things that weren't said that were the most difficult part of me, of my childhood, because I couldn't really feel like I could be authentic around someone because you're always holding back, you know. You don't feel comfortable talking about, you know, the most important things that are happening in your life because you don't want people to ask too many questions of what could possibly result from that. I think that's probably the biggest, you know, set of issues that I feel as a child and still today, that it's just somewhat today. I mean, it's a lot easier, it's a lot different now, but definitely as a child and into my teens, that it was just, I didn't want to have to, you know, talk to someone about mental illness and how much there, you know, there's fear about that. But I think that's probably the things that aren't said sometimes are the worst things.
My experience is in a lot of ways is very similar as far as that kind of isolating thing. We actually do have a caller on to join us. Bring her on. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, this is Maggie.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening, and I thought I just emailed Joe and said that I wanted to call in just because I have a few experiences that are a little bit different from the ones that you're talking about.
Okay.
And so one of the things that you didn't mention yet, but it was definitely part of my experience growing up with a mom who was hearing voices and having hallucinations, was pretty severe bullying. I actually have had some significant moments once in fourth grade coming home and finding out that my mom had been arrested in front of a cul-de-sac where we were living. And she wasn't really arrested for doing anything wrong, but she was handcuffed because she was being taken to a hospital. And all of the kids in the neighborhood watched this happen. And they believed that my mom had tried to commit suicide. But I didn't have anyone in my family who would tell me what happened. So the kids in the neighborhood stopped playing with me, but they also, so I was shunned, but they also gave me misinformation, and my family was not able to correct that. And about a year and a half later, when my mom had remarried a man who she'd met in a halfway house, this was in the early 80s, so that was the terminology of that time, she married a man with schizophrenia, and they both went off their medications after they got married. And my grandparents had at that point left the state because they had been told to leave by doctors who thought my mom was too dependent on them. And in that situation, things escalated in my home, but I was also severely beaten by children at my school. I was harassed. Children uniformly told me that they could not play with me because my mother had a mental illness. And this led me into a period of severe depression, so much so that I didn't want to go to school. And I lost almost a year of my education at around age 12. Eventually, because I was being bullied so severely, in part, my mother wanted to get us out of Wisconsin. And they got us to Texas because my stepfather had a job, but I never went to school because I was too depressed. My mom and my stepfather were off their medications. And then eventually after that, and a number of kind of traumatic events, I ended up in Arizona. And at that point, my grandparents put me into a school where happily I can say that I've had lasting relationships. Many of my classmates are still my friends. But every time I was brought into a school, all of the teachers were informed. So I often was brought into classrooms or schools halfway through a year. And I think I moved 4 times in 1 academic year as a child. And when I say moved, I don't mean from one house to another, but from one state to another. So that was like 4th grade or 5th grade. So I guess my point being that there was a lot of stigma, but there wasn't a secret. It was just this, it was bullying. And actually some of the things I've read in some of the work in the UK around children who have a parent with mental illness does identify bullying as part of the experience. So I wanted to share that. And also, once I grew older, as a young adult in my 20s, I found that people who met me and found out that I had a mom with mental illness, very often, and especially this would be kind of like if I was out and I just happened to mention it to somebody I just met, maybe a guy, and there was some flirting going on, it was not uncommon for a question to be asked either directly or indirectly as to whether or not this was hereditary. So I started to feel that I was being kind of pathologized by other people who, you know, as great as it is to understand that mental illnesses are often biologically based, it started to feel like a ticking bomb of inevitability for me, or a situation in which people just assume that if my parent has a certain type of illness, that my likelihood of having that illness was rather high. So, you know, that led to about a decade of me being kind of hypervigilant and really self-pathologizing, like worried that I was going to be ill and kind of worried when I was under stress and how I reacted to that. And I think to balance all of that, I had a tremendous amount of stress because both of my biological parents and my stepfather had mental illness or depression. So I just wanted to share that because I kind of had those were some significant moments of what I experienced as stigma. As well, a lot of my mother's extended family refused to have any contact with us. Spoke about my mom in the past tense for about 2 decades before she died, lived in different states but refused to have contact with her, and actually never inquired for the most part into the well-being of my mom or my brother or I, lived with false information about us. So it was kind of, you know, it's been an interesting experience to see how my extended family interacts with this and the level to which the stigma impacted them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess I want to go back with what Mike was saying about kind of now how he kind of like likes his private space, his personal space. And I'm the same way, in part because of, well, it's a variety of things for me. Maggie, too, you know, I've had that issue of concerns about acquiring my own diagnosis. And in my case, I have. I have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and, you know, and other health issues, neuroendocrine types of issues and trauma issues. But again, I don't really. My perspective is kind of different than the way a lot of it is presented out there in in the political mental health realm. So I don't really focus too much on my diagnosis. I have my health care issues. I take care of them, and I'm done with that. But yeah, so for me, there was a long period of time of kind of not knowing where I fit, because I found that my thing was, again, my stigma kind of issues really weren't so much about my mom's illness so much as it was about the fact of poverty. It's the fact that, you know, I was a welfare kid, and that was my stigma issue. Was how do I get off of welfare? How do I become this middle class, you know, ideal kind of world? So that's what I was struggling with a lot in my late teens, early 20s, was trying to get away from this idea of being dependent on public services. So that was my thing. And in that process, of course, there was definitely that whole issue of not sharing about my childhood and family issues and all that kind of stuff as I was definitely in my 20s. And so I do understand that kind of isolation thing that I think you were mentioning, Mike.
Yeah, I think really, my issues with self-diagnosing myself, I guess, I used to think about much more when I was probably in my early teens, up till middle 20s, maybe a little less, maybe early 20s, I guess, maybe. Because I'm only 27 now, but I think I don't really have a fear now of developing schizophrenia, even though, you know, it still could happen and things like that. But my mental health issues are more circled around anxiety than anything, and you know, depression coming from the anxiety and things. Mine, I think, probably stem from a point of trying to keep everything kind of in line, and kind of keep things in control, and make sure that you're not, you know, kind of. I was always, you know, pretty much like a good child. I never had problems, anything really, and I think part of that was because I never really felt I could kind of let my guard down to be a child, to be kind of, I don't feel that I really could be a child and have an innocence and really kind of relax and just kind of, you know, let my hair down, so to speak. I feel more, I felt like a little adult all the time. So I don't really think about it much now anymore at all, honestly. Even in stressful times, I don't feel that I'm at a risk to develop schizophrenia. But I do feel that I have more anxiety. I don't know. I know that. That all kind of developed from being really in a stressful situation and not really having the right type of tools to be able to cope with how you live in a life like that. So that's probably my biggest issue with like self-diagnosing and thinking that I will turn into my parents one day. Because you know, as much as there's a percentage of that, my mother was in no way had any mental health issues. So I don't, I just, it really never, more, it was more so when I was, you know, a teen and things like that, that I really would kind of worry about it and obsessed that, you know, that would happen. Not to keep going, but on the other note of the revealing, you know, that you have a parent with mental illness or of that variety, I realized as I got older and it was in my 20s and I would tell people that, you know, that I had a parent with mental illness, they would say, they would pretty much say the same thing, you know, that they had a parent with a mental illness, or they knew someone that had a mental illness. So even though I didn't reveal that as a child, which, child, you know, I think as everyone knows, kids can be very cruel. It took an adult, for that matter, to children. My experience, you know, talking later in life, within the last 3 years or so, has been really, I haven't really met any people that have really, I felt, stigmatized me in any way or degraded my dad. I think you get a lot of ignorant questions, but not really intentionally mean or nasty. Just general ignorance that the majority of the population have about mental illness, which I don't think was really intentional. But I can't really think of too many times that someone intentionally was degrading about my dad's condition or, you know, about my childhood. So at least as an adult, I felt that it wasn't all that tough, I guess, but maybe I think as a child, definitely it would have been much more difficult if I would have been open with that.
Okay. Well, we've already hit the halfway mark here. I'm going to actually right now ask to see if we have anyone else who wants to call in and join the conversation. The number to call in, if you're listening, is 646-564-9557. That's 646-564-9557. Okay.
I guess another kind of I like using the word discrimination more, because stigma kind of, I feel that discrimination is kind of more powerful word that people listen to you more, instead if you say stigma, but that's just my opinion. I guess the support with a child, I feel, you know, is often lacking from adults, with, you know, healthy people in your life, that don't necessarily always aware of the condition. So I think that's a tough part, to find someone that could be, you know, someone that you could really talk to about, you know, the struggles you're going through. Because I know for me, there was really no one that I ever talked to from, you know, the majority of my life. I never had one, family member or a relative or anyone, friend, that I felt comfortable to talk to with about that situation, which, again, is kind of a unique circumstances to throw a child into, because, you know, generally when a family is going through a struggle with a sickness, you have an outpouring of support. You know, I think there's a famous whatever about bringing a casserole over or whatever to someone's house. That never happens with mental illness. And it's so strange how as a society, we pick certain diseases that we kind of, we pity, or certain illnesses that we kind of bravely kind of go on with. You know, we, like, you would never see that with really any other disease. Like, if someone had a serious physical disability their entire life, I don't think you would ever see, virtually zero support in your life for that. So, and, you know, that's obviously hard for an adult, but as a child, that's even more difficult, because it goes back to the same spaces of being just very isolated from your peers and from, you know, your really anyone, your family, relatives, anything. I think that's the difficult part, is that the supports really aren't in place anywhere for what do the children do, you know? What the sick person, you know, it sometimes may have support. My dad didn't really have any type of my dad wasn't really much in the system, so to speak, as he got, you know, during my lifetime anyways. So it's not like he was having services coming to our house, really. You know, he had a psychologist and a psychiatrist, really. But that's other than that, it wasn't much. So I know for me, I felt very much stranded on an island for the majority of, well, not the majority, virtually all of my childhood.
Yeah. For me, it was a little different because, and I think Maggie too, in that, you know, because of the fact that our parents did receive services from the public system,
uh-huh,
and where we definitely would see some support developed for them from the system. I know in my case, you know, I didn't see how, you know, I was invisible to the system. It was my whole feeling was that, you know, they didn't understand my needs. And of course, I didn't know what the system was. Some of the areas for me particularly was education area. Like Maggie had mentioned before, in her case, you know, she moved around a lot as a child, and so did I. I attended, multiple schools during my childhood, and so transitioned back and forth. And, you know, and so when it came time to, you know, high school, and when everyone else was preparing to go to college afterwards and had their parents helping them fill out the forms and doing all this stuff here, I didn't have that knowledge. My mother didn't have that knowledge because she didn't go. And, you know, there was no one around who had that knowledge to help me understand how you select, you know, college to go to, how do you apply, how do you do this. And so for me, there was a very kind of a, you know, where would I go for help for this stuff? And so there was definitely and to this day, I feel very sensitive to the fact that I've got a high school diploma, but I find I'm surrounded by people with many degrees and stuff like that when we start talking mental health policy kinds of issues, and I feel very kind of like I missed out on something because of the fact of the environment that I grew up in. And it was like one of those things where, you know, there was no one to kind of blame for it, but it was kind of like an empty thing that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have answers, you know, unfortunately, to a lot of the questions about my family, just for the fact that my mother, that you know, was involved in majority is now dead. So she can't really obviously answer a lot of the reasons why that things were the way they were in my house. But I think my mom, this is just a deduction and just a guess, that probably one of the reasons why, you know, that my dad wasn't more involved maybe in this system, you know, quote unquote, is because I feel that she would have thought that our family probably would have been broken up and that people would have, there would have been, you know, people that were involved making decisions that would have probably jeopardized, you know, our family unit. And, you know, as difficult as it was growing up, in many ways, I'm kind of glad that it was kind of the way it was, because now as an adult working in the system, I could see, you know, the flaws that exist. And I don't know, you know, how my life would have been different if there would have been, like, outside services. I don't know how that would have impacted me, how that would have impacted, you know, my mom's relation, you know, with my dad, my dad living in our home. You know, I don't know how that would have, I know my mom, well, again, I don't really know 100%, but I'm guessing that one of my mom's biggest things was to keep my dad out of the hospital. And she probably would only, I know the times my dad were, you know, was in the hospital for maybe a couple days, two or three days here and there, which, you know, there was times he probably needed to be in the hospital for a lot longer than that. But I think probably her goal would have been to keep my dad out of the hospital as much as possible. And now as an adult, I can certainly understand why and why she would not really want that for his life. Even though it indirectly impacted my life a lot, but those are things she really even was aware of. But I know that it would have been much, my life would have been much, much different had I been involved in the system, quote unquote. Probably not for the best, but I don't know that really for sure.
Yeah, well, and I think that's another area that is a major stigma issue, I think, is that because you have issues around custody kind of thing and the fear of foster care and which I definitely went through at different periods because there were definitely periods where, you know, I had no idea what was going to happen next year or next week. And so I definitely understand some of those kinds of fears that are very common for young people who have a parent with mental illness. Well, we're done. We got 15 minutes left. We're moving quickly. I guess the next thing I wanted to try to get to was my concern that this might sound like a big downer, which is really not who I am, because I think I know this is the one for Maggie and I think you too, Mike, is that, you know, who we had been who we had been as children or younger people is not who we are now. So language that I had used, the types of language that I had used as a younger person, I cannot use now. It just doesn't feel right for me because I know so much more about the biology, the politics, the whatever. I think Maggie has another comment that she wants to make. Maggie, you're still online?
Yes, I'm here. Actually similar to what you were saying, Joe, I was just thinking about on a broader spectrum of, I, by the way, really love what you said, Mike, about discrimination being a very helpful way of framing what stigma, how stigma plays out. I'm also thinking about internalized stigma. And I think the way that we talk about ourselves, the idea that the negative self-talk or the way that society might label a person who has a parent with mental illness, assumption that you've been abused, assumption that that your childhood is always hard. I mean, it's a delicate balance because we certainly want to highlight that there needs to be more support and more direct information available to people who have a parent with mental illness. But at the same time, I think we can tend to maybe overly highlight one side or the other instead of having a balanced approach. And as I've grown to understand mental health and the systems and how people become the diagnosis and how diagnoses can crush identity, I started to understand how it had done that to me. So, like, growing up, my mom, we didn't have a secret. It wasn't a secret that my mom had a mental illness. But for the first few decades of my life, whenever I met someone and they said, "Who are you?" my first statement was, I'm a person who has a parent with mental illness. It had completely overwhelmed our world. It just kind of, there was nothing else. So I think moving on from stigma isn't just about discrimination, although it is. I mean, it's also kind of how I myself had to recover my identity, think of myself as more, as whole, kind of understand that this quote-unquote recovery concept is relevant to me and my identity as well as that of my mom or other people who have psychiatric experiences. So that's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound negative. I mean, people have actually told me that I'm negative, I think it's important though, that one of the reasons why I do talk about my dad's illness now is just the simple fact that if it's not going to be talked about, there's no way that there's going to be support and more funding and research and things like that. That's the way I feel that the only way to really talk about the struggles that someone has is to be open about it, because nothing will change unless, you know, the improve systems and funding and things and research that you can't just deny that it does exist, and that people do struggle a lot in many ways that they don't struggle with that they don't have to struggle with for physical, quote-unquote physical ailments. But of course, you know, as we know, the brain is part of the body and is a physical thing. I also, you know, at various times in my life, I had a lot of not necessarily good feelings about my dad, but as a child, you can only really, you can't fully understand something like that as, you know, as a child. But obviously, as I've grown older, and especially since after my mom died, my understanding and really love for my dad has come from a place that knows that he really has given everything in his life, you know, to try to overcome his illness. And in many ways, has been down the, you know, the quote-unquote recovery road of mental illness. Now it's a little more complicated since he's not doing that well. But for the majority of my life, you know, my not for the majority, maybe, for the first maybe 10 years, you know, my dad could be so well that no one would know. But then there would be the next 10 years where he would be very, it was pretty obvious that he had schizophrenia, or not schizophrenia, but he had some sort of mental illness. So I think, you know, I think, again, these are just guesses on my part, since, you know, my dad doesn't necessarily really like talking about his mental illness all that much directly with me. I think that he tried to fit in the quote-unquote normal society and try to be, I think it really, you know, the discrimination, stigma and things with having a mental illness really took a toll on him. He feels very, even till today, it's very difficult for him to be not seen as quote-unquote a normal person. He doesn't, I don't think he really likes being around other people with mental illness. So I think there has to be some kind of middle ground where, you know, you do highlight the struggles, but you also don't just try to fit into society, just to basically hide who you are. I don't think anyone should. I don't think you have to hide, you know, that you have an illness, which I think was kind of the big issue in my life, that my dad he had an illness, and me as a child and family members had his illness too. So really no one was getting help here, or the help that they really needed. So
as you're saying this, like, it occurs to me it's important to point out, which is something that we all know, which is many people who have a parent with mental illness do not disclose that they have a parent with mental illness. I mean, you've already kind of indicated in what you're saying, but there are a lot of people who work in professions in mental health who have a parent with mental illness, and there are individuals who don't, who just work in other areas. But I think actually in the mental health field, there's a strong stigma against it. It's getting better as the idea of sharing personal stories and having a story yourself is appreciated more in mental health systems. But I certainly have met quite a few people as an organizer on this topic who really hadn't been what I would call out about it, because they felt that it would hurt them professionally within the mental health system, which I think shows a deeply embedded stigma against having. There's a perception that if you have a parent with mental illness, it's kind of stereotyped into, I'm not sure if we're of the same generation, but when I was a kid, the movie Sybil had come out, and that was a big image of what it looks like to have a parent with mental illness. So it was, you know, perceived that if you had a parent with mental illness, you were, you know, coming from a very distorted place.
Yes, I'm not aware of that, but of the film. But yeah, I do definitely agree with your point about mental health professionals. Since I do, I do work in the field, but I also do a lot of activism, you know, on the activism side with NAMI and Mental Health America and different organizations. And I can tell you that it is almost night and day with the way the topic of, you know, your parent having a mental illness. I know I'll go to work and it's so strange to me, because if you would think the people that work in the field would have more of a understanding, but I do not feel that they necessarily really do, because I will openly mention my dad, and I will often get, usually the response, there's like very, very like quiet and not mentioning. I don't know if they feel uncomfortable, but I feel uncomfortable, but I don't feel uncomfortable. or they just don't know how to respond. But you would think that if you worked in the field long enough, you would know how to respond. So that would probably be why I don't work. One of the reasons, anyways, why I don't make a profession of working in the system, quote-unquote, is because I still feel much of an outsider even working in the system, which is weird to say, but it's very, very strange. However, on the, I know we're running out of time here, but on the advocate side, I can walk into a room, and you know, there are organizations that have their issues too, but I can walk into a room in an NAMI event, and everyone have someone they know have mental illness, compared to at work where I could guess if one in four people have a mental illness that someone's mother has parent has a mental illness that I work with, but is it necessarily going to share? Which that's another part that is kind of frustrating to me now as an adult is that I feel even as a professional that I'm not even accepted kind of by the people I work with. They have much, I think, a lot of professionals that have been in the field, especially a long time, have a very parental nature with people with mental illness. They want structure. They don't believe in a recovery model of that kind of philosophy. They're very into, you know, kind of the old state hospital system of, you know, telling people how to live, what to do, and things like that. And it's a frustration for me for sure that I feel a lot, almost daily.
Yeah. I've actually extended the time a little bit since we're kind of on this discussion, so we may be going a little over our hour. Because this is an area, too, that I noticed a lot when I first got involved in kind of the advocacy world and on mental health issues. And one of my big things, and again, I've had issues, too, with, you know, I've never been an official mental health professional, but I've definitely known quite a few and have worked with them. But yeah, I've had to, some of the stigma issues that I've seen with that is one was a huge issue for me, which I really struggled with when I was in my early 20s. And this is, again, one of those things that happens to someone from my type of family growing up that doesn't happen in kind of other types of families, was that, you know, I was 22 years old. I had just come out of the Marine Corps, came home to stay with my mom while I was looking for work. But, of course, you know, she was receiving public services, and her therapist was, like, telling her how I was kind of taking advantage of her and all this kind of stuff because, you know, again, you know, so this therapist that she was saying was trying to tell my mom that I was the enemy. But here I was with a 22-year-old kid who was pretty clueless to the world. And, you know, that was a huge issue that I had had because, you know, it's common in our world now where people in their, you know, young 20s might be still at home with their parents a little later than that 18 years old when you're supposed to be out kind of thing. But because of systemic issues about what is the correct way to do things, you know, I was really felt kind of, you know, insulted that this idea that, you know, that I was being accused of something that never occurred to me.
It's great, by the way, Joe, that you and Mike are having this conversation because we rarely get to talk to one person identified as male on this topic, but having both of you is really helpful. And I am also struck by something I know from our conversations, Joe, and that is that you're not the only person I've known with a parent with mental illness who felt that the economic situation and some of the other systemic situations were particularly hard as a man. Like I think that's an interesting thing, and I think we need more studies of this because we don't know. Like, I don't want to overly generalize about men and their experience, and I don't want to overly generalize about women either, you know. But I can say from my own experience with a woman that facing some of the similar situations, I didn't get as upset about those aspects as I did about some other things. You know what I mean? So I'm just sharing that because there's some aspects about, that I can see as like men often, it's my perception that men think in terms of being a provider and becoming a man in the world and certain types of things that I wasn't thinking about. You know, I was just thinking about surviving and not having a place to sleep. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't as upset or aware of this systemic stuff as affecting me as I went into my early life in that way.
Yeah. The other thing that I've seen, too, and this goes really... especially when we get into kind of like the activist community that I've seen a lot of, is this kind of perceived inexperience on issues. You know, for example, you know, because, you know, when I first got involved in some organizations, you know, I was like Mike is now in my 20s, and a lot of the experts were all in their 40s, 50s. And a lot of these were, you know, more parents of persons with mental illnesses. And, you know, and there was really kind of this sense of, you know, feeling that my experience wasn't as knowledgeable about mental health and mental illness and the public system because I was younger. But the fact of, you know, my history was, you know, 20 years versus maybe they've only been familiar with public systems for 5. And I think that's kind of one of those areas, I think, that one of the reasons for, I think, bringing up the whole idea of this daughters and sons kind of community network is to point out that there is a lot more experience than I think others may give us credit for. And I think there's some stuff about that, about, you know, it's a kind of the youth thing.
Yes, I agree 100% with what you just said there, right? Nothing maddens me more at work when someone will bring up how long of experience they've had in the, you know, quote unquote, working in the field, meaning the system, you know, the system that they work in or, you know, the mental health services. And for me, I even put things on my cover letter, about my personal experiences about that. And I've been passed up for, you know, numerous jobs due to lack of experience, or you don't have the experience. And I said, my point was, I have more experience than anyone here, working with, you know, if the job is working with someone that has a mental illness, I'm the most experienced person probably here. I have a life. And I feel that, you know, I've started out on the low end of pay, for people to have quote unquote more experience. And I feel that one of the biggest issues of discrimination and stigma that occur in mental health is the discrimination against how the system works itself. I think there's a lot in just the service providers and how they operate is that people with mental illness need to be pretty much kept, the highest priority should be safety, that people with mental illness cannot make decisions that you or I would make when there is some, you know, great threat. So, you know, people have to be constantly monitored and watched. I just feel that it is so damaging that someone that has lived experience is just, you know, many times ignored because they haven't actually worked, you know, in the quote-unquote system. And I think that's a big thing where the peer movement, comes into play, is that, you know, peers, that have mental illness or drug and alcohol addiction themselves could play such a big factor in that I feel that, you know, a lot of people in the mental health services discriminate against and don't feel that their opinions are as valid. And especially that comes into play with I think, some forms of psychiatry. So it's still a very top-down model. We have to, you know, we have to do things based on billing and insurance, and it's very much still in line with, you know, a medical model with people that, you know, they have the drugs, they have the ways of fixing people, quote unquote. And I feel that that's very unfair because I think, you know, psychiatrists, you know, sometimes can, you know, they're guessing to be just as good as anyone else with mental illness sometimes. So I do feel that I'm often overlooked, you know, despite my years of experience is living with someone, you know, not at a desk, not at, you know, some distance, you know, this real experience. I feel like that I'm overlooked a lot at you know, in my life.
And I agree with your point completely, and I think you bring up another aspect, which I'm just kind of wanting to highlight a little bit more, which is this discrimination against children as not having experiences that are worthy of or that have insight, right? You know, like one of the people in the broader network of Daughters and Sons work in the world is Christos in Quebec, and he often talks about the human rights of the child and adultism, right? So that, I think, plays out a bit as young adults when people perceive that you don't have experience, right? Because those experiences growing up are actually incredibly filled with insight that maybe a person couldn't possibly have unless they had gone through that at that particular age, you know? And I've had some experiences, Mike, where I was actually being given a lot of credit for having insight and lived experience, and yet working with professionals, and one in particular, a coworker when I was implementing a program in Minnesota, once said to me, well, you know, this is a person who had decades of experience in mental health systems, and he said, you know, people with mental illness used to be more dangerous than they are now. They were much more dangerous in the 70s. And I just looked at him, I said, in the 70s, I was living with people with mental illness. I didn't know anybody who didn't have a mental illness because all the people I knew were my mom's friends from her halfway house, and none of them were dangerous. So he was speaking to me as though I don't have memories of the 70s and as though I wouldn't have memories of people with psychiatric illness in the 70s. And that happened in, I think, 2009, so I was about 39 years old at that point, and he was probably in his early 60s. So he just didn't, he couldn't think of me as somebody who would have memories of psychiatric systems in the 70s. And then also in NAMI, I've had situations where a person had just found out that their child, who's in their 20s, has a mental illness, and they'll be in a group together, and they found out that my mom had a mental illness, and it was almost like it was too hard for them to comprehend that their child was possibly going to go on with this for a long time? Like, they'd start to ask me questions. How old was my mom? When did she first become ill? And at that point, she'd been ill for about 30 years. So I could see also that there was this interesting generational dynamic, because we're mirrors to each other, you know. And somehow there was something about my presence, even though I was younger, but recognizing that my mom had been ill for many years, that was causing people who just found out that they had a family member with mental illness to think about it in a way that they weren't ready. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I just wanted, the whole idea that I think safety is very important, but what you just said about the way our model is set up just shows the depths of how we stigmatize people with mental illness as dangerous, you know, and only provide support in those situations too, which is a different kind of big topic. But
I think I don't know how much time we have left, but I basically feel, you know, that since I've worked in the field for 3 years now, that there's still so much, even people that really do believe in like recovery models and type of things like that, still very, I don't know if it's a, you know, like a parental nature that people think that people with mental illness can't make their own decisions, or it's just kind of like, you know, still from state hospitals where people were more or less controlled, told to obey, that there's still very much a reluctance I work in a group home, and a reluctance to let people make their own decisions, even minor decisions that, you know, at the end of the day, that everyone that, you know, my coworkers make, they're bad. Like, say someone, a diet someone has. Oh, we have to you know, monitor their diet. Yet I see, you know, a coworker doing the exact same thing, maybe worse, and they are not called out on that for that. You know, that the mentally ill person, just for the fact that they have a mental illness, is called out for having a poor lifestyle. But there's so many other factors into why those things are happening that a quote-unquote healthy person would never have to explain in society or anywhere else. If someone was overweight, they don't have to necessarily defend why they're overweight, yet a mentally ill person would in certain situations, they would definitely have to defend on why, you know, they're eating this much or doing these certain things, where healthy people never really do.
Yeah. Well, we've gone to an hour and 15 minutes, so we're 50 minutes over in our scheduled time, so I think it may be time for us to wrap up. I'll give both of you a chance to say a couple more things, if you have anything that you want to leave for the audience to listen to. Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think is that the relationships that we had with our parents in many ways have developed long after the situation that we lived in growing up. I think that's the most important thing to realize, is that that we have much care and love for our parents, that as children it's difficult to necessarily express or understand, but that our relationships are developing differently as we get older. So I guess that's all I got.
Maggie?
I guess particularly that stigma as a concept seems to me to be tied to identity and identity formation, and how we decide who we believe we are. as people, as human beings. That's influenced by a lot of factors and outside factors, how people treat us, the discrimination that we experience, and how we react and respond to that. But identity formation is a key issue for people who have a parent with mental illness in particular. So I think that's something that it would be good to have further conversations about regarding how children develop and differentiate from their parents and the level to which we can understand ourselves as separate from our parent and how that relates to our wellness as well. And I think there's a lot of different factors that can influence that. Maybe if you're the same gender as the parent that has the illness or not, if you have a second parent that isn't, you know, is able to somehow fill in gaps, et cetera. So, you know, another topic for a different day, but I do think identity formation and stigma are related.
Okay. Well, then that's it. Next week we have Susan Smiley is going to be here. For those who are not aware, 10 years ago, Susan Smiley produced and directed a documentary by the name of called Out of the Shadow, where she chronicles kind of their story of her mother, her sister, and their challenges with navigating public mental health system. And so we're going to be talking to Susan about the movie, what she's doing now, and I'm expecting this to be really nice, nice show. 2 weeks from now, we'll have another guest. We'll have Linda Gray Sexton, who 20 years ago wrote the book Searching for Mercy Street, related to her relationship with her mother, Ann Sexton, who had taken her life when Linda was young. And Linda has written several books and some novels, but also a series of memoirs, and we'll be taking a look at some of Linda's experience and discuss some of the books that she did. So those are our next two episodes, and I'd like to thank both Mike and Maggie for joining me, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
All right.